Thank you very much. I think everybody's sort of revved up tonight, right?
Yeah.
Having a lot of fun. Great. Yeah. Just echo a little bit too much. Can you hear that in the cheaper seats in the back? Might have to turn it down slightly. Well, this has been exciting for us to be here, to be at OU and enjoy getting to know a lot of people. And year after year, I go back to certain places. I was here last year. And Colorado State University is one of the places I go back year after year during the summer times. And I get to meet the same people. Well, I was a couple years ago, I was back on the campus. And I was walking down the sidewalk and I saw this girl whose back was to me. She was talking to a friend of hers on the sidewalk and I recognized her. But I decided because she was talking to a friend, I wouldn't say anything. I just kind of walked past. So as I'm walking past her on the sidewalk, I overheard a conversation. And she was talking to her girlfriend, and she pointed to some other guy on the campus, and she said, "See that guy? He's an HBL." Now, I had never heard that expression before, an HBL. So I stopped, and I turned around, and I said, "Well, hi, Ann. How you doing?" She said, "Oh, hi, Dick." I said, I just happened to overhear your conversation." She said, "Oh, you did?" I said, "Well, yes, I heard you call that guy over there an HBL." I said, "What is an HBL?" She says, "Oh, well, that's girl talk." And I said, "Well, great, you're a girl, so talk." She said, "Well, that means he's a hunk of burning love." So I can imagine, all around game, HBL, HBL, HBL. But that's really kind of something we want to talk about tonight, in the whole area of intimacy, sexuality. And we're kind of interested in the opposite sex. We want to develop a good relationship. We want to involve ourselves with someone of the opposite sex and enjoy that kind of experience. I mean, why else would you come to OU? And my philosophy is you never let your studies interfere with your education. But as we begin tonight, I want to define a word, and the word I want to define is the word intimacy. The word intimacy, unfortunately, over the past few decades, has taken on a sexual connotation. That is, if one of you men walked up to one of you women tonight and said, "Hi, I would like to become intimate with you tonight," she'd respond, "Bug off, buddy boy." You know, it has that kind of sexual connotation. So, for our purposes tonight, I want to redefine the word as to what I really believe it does mean, and that is total life sharing. So, intimacy means total life sharing. Now, I believe that we desire deep down inside of ourselves to have someone close to us. That is, to be known for who we are, to be loved for who we are, and to love someone in the same manner. But the difficulty we find is that often we are very afraid of the thing we want. A man named Marshall Hodge has written a book called Your Fear of Love. And in this book he says this: we long for expressions and moments of intimacy and caring. But frequently at the critical point in a relationship, we draw away, we pull back from the very thing we're interested in, which is love. We are afraid to love. Later on in his book, on page 16, he says this: the closer you come to someone emotionally, the greater potential there is for that person to reject you and hurt you. And it is the fear of pain that drives us away. I mean, do you like pain? Do you walk around campus saying, "Please, somebody hurt me, somebody hurt me"? I mean, if you do, I mean, you need my services. I'm a counselor. I mean, we don't usually begin a relationship hoping to get hurt. Now, that may be the end result, but we don't start out like that. When I was in a small school in southern Illinois, I speak on a lot of interpersonal relationships. If you've seen some of the tapes or the books, a lot of the relationships, like why couples break up is a talk I give, how to know when you're in love, another talk, commitment, the key to loving, what is a man, how to love a woman, understand the opposite sex, many, many other topics. So I have lots of people ask me questions, and I enjoy that. If you want to ask questions, you know, feel free. I try to answer if I can. Well, this one girl came over to me, and she said, "I want to ask about my boyfriend. I have some troubles with him." So we talked for a while, and then she made this statement. She said, "I'm now taking steps never to get hurt again." I said, "In other words, you are now taking steps never to love again." She said, "No, that's not what I said." She said, "What I'm saying is, I don't want some guy to bring pain into my life." I said, "That's right. You don't want some guy to bring love into your life." She said, "What do you mean?" I said, listen, there's no such thing as love without pain. It does not exist. And so the dilemma that you and I often face is we want intimacy, we want closeness, we want love, but we're afraid of rejection and pain. That is a dilemma. A man named John Powell has written quite a few books. One of his books is named, Why Am I Afraid to Love? And in this book, John Powell says this. He says that love is essentially a relationship. Now that is a significant statement. Love is essentially a relationship. Love is not a one-night stand. Love is not a weekend off somewhere. Love is not even a month or a year. But a love, a marriage love, is a commitment for a lifetime. Amen. It is not just some nice feelings that you may have for each other. But the difficulty with that is it's difficult for us to really establish good, deep relationships. People have often what I call high-bye relationships. You're walking down the campus, hi, bye, you know, really close relationship. Or you're walking down the sidewalk and you see somebody coming to you and you know that you know them, only you have forgotten their name. And so from a distance, you mumble their name. Hi, and you're hoping sounds like the person's name. He thinks you know him. Unfortunately, we have difficulty really getting to know people. When I was at Stephen F. Austin University, it's way down in Nacogdoches, Texas, this fella talked to me afterward and he said to me, I never met this man before in my life. Came over to me and said, 10,000 students on this campus and I feel so lonely. Would you ever feel that way? Sometimes you can walk all day long on campus and never see anybody you know. Or you can walk all day on campus and never see anybody you like. But it's true, we struggle with loneliness. Psychology Today did an article on loneliness in which they had surveyed 42,000 of the readers and they found out that 67% of the people who responded said they felt lonely. The highest age group that had loneliness was high school students, 79%. Second highest was college men and women, 72%. There's a book called Singles, the New Americans. In this book, they interviewed 3,000 single adults all across America in a random survey representing, hopefully, the whole population of single adults. They asked them many questions. One question was this, what is the most difficult thing you face as a single adult? 80% said loneliness. Now, why is it that single people, high school, college, and single adults, have such difficulty in this area? I think it's because when we're single, we are so aware of either not being loved or not having a companion, or having a companion but not really enjoying the in-depth companionship you would like. So we sense that loneliness. In fact, it's one thing to be alone in your room and feel lonely. It's a far different thing to be in a crowd like this size and feel lonely. That's more devastating, isn't it? To have everybody around you, you still feel like you're the only one in the room. Now the difficulty often comes about loneliness is that we don't like to admit it. I mean, you walk and say up to people and say, hey, I'm lonely. I mean, you know, your friends will say, well, we're your friends. Well, I don't care, I'm still lonely. I mean, you ever try to cover up your loneliness? For example, go to a party and you feel lonely at a party. Now, people are not supposed to feel lonely at a party. But we do. Remember, suppose you're sitting there at the party, you feel lonely and you kind of feel it in your stomach and someone comes over to you and says, hey, having a good time? And what do you say? Yeah, having a great time. You know, you put on this big fake smile to try to tell people, hey, I'm happy, but you're not inside. And by the way, speaking about parties, have you ever noticed something about parties that people talk about how great parties are, either in the past or in the future? I mean, you hear people talk? Oh, for example, the past. People say, hey, man, the great party you missed, you went home. Good night. We had a fantastic time. We did this and we did that. It was terrific. Or in the future. Do you see the posters we have all over this campus? We are going to have a party that's going to beat all parties. I mean, we're going to have a great time. You got to come. We have 4 kegs for 2 people. But when you go to these parties in the present tense, aren't a lot of these parties really dull? You know, you have all the girls on one side, all the guys on the other side, scoping each other out. Oh, look at that one. Oh, look at that one over there. And you got to get a few beers under your belt to break down your inhibitions and sort of, oh, I don't know. Now look, do you want to have fun at a party? I will tell you how to have fun at a party. You go to the party after it's been going on for 2 hours. You arrive and you're the only sober one in the crowd. You will see a zoo. Absolute zoo. Some guy walking down the hallway, smashing into a door. I didn't see you there, buddy. I'm sorry, you know. People always ask me when they hear that I had a major in zoology. They ask me, what's zoology? I said, it's easy. That's a study of parties. You know, zoology, ology study, zoo party. Okay, good. Right. We're right. Right. You know what amazes me, though, about parties? Nobody ever tells you about the morning after. Now, let me describe the morning after to you. Well, you're on all fours in the bathroom with your head in the toilet bowl calling dinosaurs. Have you ever noticed something when you vomit in a toilet bowl, it echoes? Isn't that gross? Isn't that gross? Well, hang in there. Who knows? It may get worse here. But you ought to ask your buddy, hey, you having fun now? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But see, nobody ever tells you about the consequences of some of these things.
Amen.
Well, let me explain some ideas here. What's the major problem that we really face? The major problem is that we are basically all self-centered people. Now, you may say, wait a minute, Pernell. You telling me that I am self-centered? Well, yeah, let me give you an example. Up here in Oklahoma, do you all have a driver's license? Do you have a picture on the driver's license? You do? Okay. Now, if somebody wants to see your driver's license, what's the very first thing you say? It's a bad picture. I have no idea where they get the cameras to take these pictures, but they all look kind of crummy to me. I mean, you'd walk up to your friends, you want to see a great picture of me? Here is my driver's license. I remember when the first time I really had example of this, I was a student in graduate school at Indiana University, and I was going through the registration line first time. Came to this one table where a lady was and said, hey, do you have an ID? And I said, no, ma'am, I'm a brand new student. She said, okay, follow that line. Get your picture taken over there. I said, okay. I followed the line, stood in front of this big camera. At the top of the camera was a big red dot. And under there was a big sign. It says, look at the red dot. So I was in a happy mood, you know, kind of looking all over the place. You know, I'm doing pretty good. And I got the picture back. The picture looked like my eyes rolled back in my head like a zombie. You know? Nobody that entire semester saw that ID, believe me. The next semester, I'm going through the registration line. Lady says, do you have an ID? I said, yes, ma'am, I do. But to be perfectly honest, I would like a different picture. She said, okay, follow the line. So I followed the line, stood in front of the same camera, top of the camera, said, look at the red dot. I said, no way, Jose. Not this time. I've learned my lesson. I'm looking down the bottom of the camera. When I got the picture back, popped my head right here. You know, they're just players we just can't win, right? Now, the thing about us is that we always like to be in a good light. We always want to be number one. We never want to be number two. Now, because each of us have had difficulties in relationships, we struggle in this area. Now, when you walked in this door tonight, if I had the opportunity, I would have taken each one of you aside individually. I would have asked you one question. Have you ever been hurt in a relationship before? And I would estimate somewhere around 100% would say, yes, I've been hurt before. But now you're a university student. And you may say, I am now mature. I have learned my lessons. I'm never going to be hurt again. And so what you do is you want to protect your heart. So what you do, we build a big wall around our heart. Now the purpose of this wall around our heart is to keep people outside from ever getting in to hurt us. But remember this, the same wall that keeps people outside from getting it to hurt us, that wall keeps you stuck inside by yourself. And that's the source of loneliness. In fact, I counsel a lot of married couples, and I find that you can be living together in the same house with somebody, and you never have broken down the walls, simply banging each other's walls, but you've never torn them down to express who the real being is inside of you. So, how do we overcome some of these things? When you walked in this door, I could have also said to you that each one of you is a star. Now, I'm not a Hollywood talent scout here, although I did live in Southern California for a number of years. But each person, I believe, has 5 points of his or her life. like 5 points of a star. You have the physical, the social, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual. 5 points, like 5 points of a star. Physical, social, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And I believe that we are designed by God to have equilibrium. That is, to have harmony between those points. We look at a star, all five of those points are harmonious toward each other. The only difficulty is if you could take one point of the star and emphasize that point to the exclusion of others, like taking a big yank and pull that star, the other 4 points are pulled out of shape. And so what you have left is no longer a star, you have a lopsided star. And in our culture, we have difficulties in one particular area. That is, I believe that we are very impatient people. We are what I call the instant gratification generation. That is, we don't like to wait for anything. We have instant breakfast, instant milk, instant everything. Someday some genius is going to invent instant water. Just add water, get more water. Yeah, but we have all sorts of instant everything. And really what I think we do is we look for instant intimacy. We don't want to wait. We want it now. Well, of those five areas, physical, social, emotional, mental, and spiritual, which area is the easiest and the simplest to find intimacy in? Well, it's the physical, right? It's not the social area, because it's socially, if two people are learning to date and develop together, it takes time to figure out what a person does in public, how they relate to your friends, how you relate to that person's friends, how about the potential in-laws, what do you do in certain social situations. It takes a time to learn about each other. Another thing is not the emotional area, because it takes time to learn someone's emotions. How do you feel about things? What makes you sad? What makes you feel good? What makes you feel successful or feel rejected? It takes time to learn about these things. And it's not the mental area, because it takes time to learn somebody's mind. What are your thoughts about certain things? How do you make decisions? What do you like? What do you dislike? It takes time to work out harmony and understanding that area. And it's not the spiritual area. It takes time to understand what's your concept of God. What is your purpose in life? What direction? What do you believe about prayer? Many other things. It takes time. Some of these issues really takes a lifetime in order to understand somebody. But of all the areas, simplest is the physical. I mean, being brutally open here, you can be in instant intimacy and physically in 2 hours, or 1 hour, or half an hour. It depends on the urge, right? You may say, I have got to have lovin' this weekend or I will die. Now, when you're in this kind of idea, we need to work on understanding how the mind works. Now, last night, if you were here, when I talked on how to live with yourself and like it, I promised you that I'd let you inside the minds of people in the area of sex, especially women. I promised that I would let you know about how a man thinks in this area of sex. Well, we are now at the point where we're going to talk about it. Of course, the girls have all the notes out, and the guys are looking for the exits. Anyway, just give some ideas. Now, women, to understand a guy, you have to realize when a man first becomes interested in the opposite sex. This usually starts around junior high. Of course, for some guys, it starts in kindergarten. Anyway, junior high. Now, what does a junior high boy do all summer long? Oh, he plays baseball and video games. He hasn't seen a girl all summer long. Then he goes back to school. And as he begins to look around school, he suddenly becomes aware something has happened to the girls. Now, women, up until this time, we men think girls are just funny-looking guys. And all of a sudden, we want to relate to one of you. But how do you do it? Well, a junior high kid sees some of the older guys with their arm around a girl, and it looks pretty good. So he wants to put his arm around a girl. Now, women, when a man is trying to put his arm around you, he is faced with several struggles. Two in particular, although we do have many. Two problems a man is facing. Number one, no man wants to put his arm around a woman who responds like a refrigerator. You know, what is this doing around me? Huh? We don't want that response. The second thing is this. Once a man gets his arm around you, he wants to keep it there. You see, women, instead of a man's mind, you have to understand something. He realizes that once he conquers territory, he does not want to retreat. Looks like he's defeated, right? So get his arm around one of you and keep it there. But how do you do this? Now, this is not easy. Guy sees a girl he kind of likes. She's walking down the street. He could do this. You know, we experiment, right? Try different things. He could go over to the girl and kind of put his arm around her and say, "Let me brush the lint off your shoulder." It is very dumb, man, to try that. Although you could say, "Let me brush off your dandruff." But that does not endear her heart to you whatsoever. So that usually fails. Oh, another one. Hey, it's cold outside. You're in school. And you see she's getting close to going outside near the door. So you can run over to her, get her coat, put her coat on, and leave the arm there. You know? And she says, "What's the hunk of meat doing on my shoulder?" It doesn't really get the kind of response we're looking for. So we think, and we think. And then we devise a strategy. We invite one of you women to a movie theater. It is commonly known as a passion pit. Now, women, when you're going into the passion pit with a man, you have to understand there are dynamics that are going on inside of a man. First of all, the guy realizes he must work very quickly because he's only paid for 2 hours of darkness. And the second thing is that while he's in there in the movie theater with you, he has no idea what is on the screen. It really doesn't matter whatsoever. Anything could be playing. Who cares? All he knows is that this girl next to him is warm and she breathes. And he wants to comfort that breathing of hers. So for 45 minutes, he's trying to get up the energy and the courage to put his arm around you. And then, men, we revert to the oldest tactic known to mankind. It's called the yawn. Of course, the girl is saying to herself, "Hey, after 45 minutes, it's about time." But women, as long as you live on the face of this earth, you will never fully understand the pain. It starts in the shoulder blade. And it slowly progresses outward. And after 10 minutes, you feel the fingers are falling off. You got to lean back in the chair. "Oh, they're mine. Oh, look at that." But isn't it exciting to get your arm around a girl and she likes it? Now, involved in all this, you have to understand a law. It's called the law of diminishing returns. I want to describe this law to you and define it. We're going to use a graph paper. I'm sure in many courses you have graph papers. You have vertical lines and horizontal lines. Now, the vertical line represents the level of excitement in the relationship, level of excitement, and the horizontal line represents time. So the idea is get a lot of excitement and extend it over time. So a level of excitement starts like this, goes from 0 point up, goes like this. Ha, 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 that's level of excitement. And time. Now, the law of diminishing returns says this in reference to this whole area. The more you do it, the less satisfying it is. The more you do it, the less satisfying it is. Now, when you get your arm around a girl, it's exciting. In fact, you know, you start going up that scale, right? That's pretty good. But as time goes on, remember that timeline? As time goes on, the level of excitement goes downhill. I mean, after a while, you know, you put your arm around the old girlfriend, let's go. You know, it just doesn't turn your crank anymore. Just something that just doesn't bring any more joy and thrills to your heart. So what happens is that goes down in excitement. You have to bring something more into that relationship to add the excitement. Oh, well, then we try kissing. Now, of course, some of us men skip the preliminaries, arm around, and go straight for a woman's lips. Now, when a man is heading that direction, women, you have to understand two additional problems a man has. No man enjoys a woman who responds like an ice cube. "Oh, I'm sorry I did that. I really am, bro." And the other response that he does not really like is, no man likes a woman who's leaning away from him. "What are you doing? What are you doing? Come on, what's going on right here?" You women wonder why we men wait until we get you to a door to kiss you goodnight? You can't lean back through the door. Oh no, here it comes. I knew it was going to happen tonight. Hi, how you doing? Hello. Some of you have been there, haven't you? But when you finally kiss the girl and she likes it and responds, nice, right? That's nice. In fact, that's better than the arm around, correct? So on that scale, it goes up. Pretty exciting. But as time goes on, even that goes downhill in excitement. I mean, you kiss the old girlfriend, it's okay, it's all right. But it just is not the way it used to be. You want more. Oh, so as that goes down in excitement, you try something more. Well, then you try French kissing. You men never knew how much room was back in a woman's mouth. I mean, just think of all the tongue wrestling bouts you have. Wah, 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 wah. Pass a lifesaver back and forth every so often. Some of you have tried that, haven't you? I mean, isn't that exciting? I mean, that's more exciting than just the ordinary stuff, right? But, you know, even that goes downhill in excitement. I mean, let's face it. After 3 or 4 hours of clenchy-glenchy mouth-mouth and steamed-up windows, what do you end up saying? Water. I'm dry. Oh, I've got a headache. Oh, man. You know, I wonder why some restaurants stay open late at night. It's to rejuice dried-up couples. In other words, what I'm simply saying is what starts out so good doesn't always continue in that fashion. So as that goes downhill in excitement, what we want is something additional. Well, then we try petting. We want to involve ourselves. We want to explore. We want to share intimacies and caring. And so that's really exciting. But even that goes downhill in excitement. I mean, after you keep exploring the same territory, it's no more fun. You want to go on for more. And so what happens is, you go all the way. The only problem is this. Once you go all the way, that's all there is. There's no more. Well, what do you do when that starts losing excitement? What do you do when that starts producing guilt in your life? Well, what do you do when you start feeling used? Or you feel just as lonely now as you did before. It doesn't seem to last, and emptiness just gets deeper. What do you do when you just really can't look that person straight in the face anymore? Maybe even embarrassed. Well, in our culture, we try to fix the thing up some ways, different ways. One way is we try to rationalize our activities. We never tell our friends really what's going on. We just say, oh, we're having a meaningful relationship, or my girlfriend and I are really getting it on. And we talk how so big and so brave and so great and so wonderful. But it's a cover-up for the scars you're putting in your heart. I'm a counselor. They come to me in the privacy of my office the next day. The hurt and the pain. Other people rationalize by saying, oh, we're in love. And when you're in love, that's just what you do. I say, if you're in love, you will seek the highest and the best for the other person. And the highest and the best for the other person is to enjoy that person, but to reserve the beauty of sex for commitment. Without commitment, there is no love. It is the enjoyment of sexuality for a while, but doesn't last very long when there's no commitment there. Oh, other people, besides rationalizing, they try better techniques. Have you ever do that? I mean, go check out Dr. Ruth. Go find out what she has to say. What's the latest thing on TV? Read some of the materials. And then go to the magazine racks and check out the pictures and memorize the steps. Now, you know why you memorize the steps? It's tacky to bring the magazine with you on the date. You ever notice something, though, when you do all the latest techniques, all the latest moves, you still feel empty. It doesn't give you lasting satisfaction. Well, the only other thing we have besides rationalizing and finding better techniques is to find a different partner. You get tired of that one. Go find somebody else. You get tired of that one. Go find somebody else. You get tired of that one. We go from person to person to person, looking for the one that's going to give us the best satisfaction and the greatest experience, and we find we end up in the same place every time. And some of us talk so big on the outside and hurt so much on the inside. And that's unfortunate. It's what I call the morning after syndrome. Emma Tayazioni, one of the foremost sociologists today, has talked about this. He's written quite a few books. And he said this: all the sexual spice leads to less satisfaction. Dr. Joyce Brothers was quoted in Time magazine as saying that sex has not become as satisfying as a sneeze. I mean, how sexy is a sneeze? You know, not very sexy. Dr. Henry Brandt has written quite a few books. He wrote an article in a collegiate magazine, and he said there's a syndrome. So many couples would come to him with problems in this area. He felt this was a pattern. Either the man or the woman would say to him, you know, at first it was exciting. Well, then I started to feel badly about myself. Then I started to feel badly about my partner. We fought. We broke up. And now we're enemies. I bet you, on this campus, a lot of enemies walking around. The relationship started out so good, so much potential, and now it's devastated. And sex is not the cement of a relationship, it is the explosive. It has destroyed more relationships than any other reason. Now, I want to say some things you'll never read in a book. I just finished writing a book, it's going to come out in 2 weeks, called Becoming a Friend and Lover. I have one whole chapter. Actually, I wrote two chapters on this particular topic I'm going to talk about for a few minutes. And the editor knocked off one whole chapter. So I only have one chapter in there, but I got enough material to cover a whole book. In fact, I'm starting another book now just to talk about some of these things, because there's so much material, but you never read them in popular magazines. You're never going to see this on television. You'll never see it in the movies, the thing I'm going to tell you. Just a few minutes here about some of the repercussions, some of the consequences of premarital sex. The major one is the psychological repercussions. See, when you get involved intimately with someone else, it affects you psychologically. You may not notice it one day or 6 days or 6 months or 6 years, but it's there. One of the psychological repercussions is what is called flashbacks. That is, if you've been in bed with somebody, later on you do get married, let's say, even when you're in bed with your wife, you begin thinking about other women you've been in bed, or if it's a woman in bed with her husband, you think about other people. I know a friend of mine who's in graduate school, been married 5 years. He said the biggest problem he has with his wife is when he's in bed with his wife, he thinks about some of the other women, and he can't stop the thoughts from coming back into his mind. And it just detracts from whatever love that he has for his wife. Number two is comparisons. You begin to compare this person with other people. And the more experience you have, the more you have to compare with. You know, you think about this person. Oh, well, you know, I wish this person would kiss like the other one I had. Or this person is okay in moves, but not quite as good as the other one. And you begin to compare. And whenever you start comparing, you can't fully express your total being. A lot of sick jokes about comparing one with another. Another one is guilt. The psychological impact of guilt is devastating in a relationship. You may think you get away with it for a while. But what happens after 5 or 6 years of marriage, when all the fun is gone, when all the newness is gone, all the adjustments are made, and now you're down to routine existence. And pretty soon you begin to remember the things that you did beforehand. And one of the things that psychiatrists are finding today in the sexual areas is what is called ISD, which is inhibited sexual drive. People are getting tired of sex. Isn't that amazing? When's the last time I heard anybody say that? That's why you have to have sex counselors all over the place, because people are so tired of it. And pretty soon you get into kinky sex. You have to have used mechanical things and all kinds of pictures to generate something which is beautiful in and of itself, but we have made it something which is so trashy. Another thing that we face, besides all these, and guilt, frustration, are some of the physical repercussions. Venereal disease is at an all-time high. There's some strains of gonorrhea that are no longer susceptible to penicillin. Herpes is incurable. AIDS is coming into the heterosexual area right now through prostitutes. And not only that, but I read in USA Today a couple of weeks ago that AIDS can take 7 years to generate itself. 7 years. That's horrible. Along with that, you have unwed pregnancies. That is, people who don't want their children. In my city of Dallas, 21% of all births are illegitimate. That does not even consider the number of abortions. A lot of hurt and maimed lives. I have women come to me, even middle-aged women, with the psychological scars in the heart. Hurt. They've had an abortion. Get pregnant. The boyfriend says, well, get rid of it. Sure, easy to make that simple decision. It's difficult for a woman to live with that the rest of her life. There are many other things I wish I could say. I don't have the time. I just simply want to say this. You may think, as you're sitting there, Purnell, are you against sex? Well, I'd like to go on record and say this out loud. I think sex is terrific. I'll go one step further. I'll say this out loud. I believe God thinks sex is terrific. You may be saying, oh, wait a minute. God thinks sex is terrific? I mean, when you're going to go and make out, where do you want God? At home. Stay at home. Or if God's got to get in the car, the trunk. I mean, you don't want God there. He may spoil your fun. And we have this conception of God, some big old man who's got a long beard with a baseball bat in his hand. Anybody looks like they're having fun, he's going to whomp him upside the head, right? You know, that's not the conception the Bible gives of God. Amen. Let me explain some things that might be interesting to you. Because God is the creator, I believe he is. God is the creator. He made sex. The Bible says he made male and female. He knows everything there is to know about sex. He knows how the plumbing works. You know, nothing surprises God. I mean, I don't think God's up there in heaven looking down at you, making out. I don't think God goes, wow, you're good. You're really good. I mean, will you do that one again? I'm going to take notes on you. You're good. And I don't think God is really surprised. Now, here's a question for you to mull over. Since God is the creator, knows everything about sex, is it possible that he could give you the best sex life you could ever have? I believe he can. I would be a fool to speak to thousands of college men and women every week and not believe that. Oh, but I do want to say this. He wants to give us the best sex life possible. But it's in his way and his time. You may say, well, Purnell, that just takes away all my fun. Well, let me give you a different kind of example. When you drive a car, hopefully you drive according to the laws. I mean, you drive on the right-hand side of the road in this country. But let's face it, this is a free country. And it is your car. You can drive your car anywhere you please. You can drive on the left-hand side of the road if you want. You can drive up somebody's tree if you want. Drive in a riverbed. You can drive anywhere you want with that car. You may not get there. Where you want to go? But do you see, if there are no laws, there's no freedom? It's disastrous. And everybody fending for herself is simply anarchy. And will never get anywhere. But laws are there to give you freedom and to give you happiness and to prevent you from getting into situations that could hurt you and even cost you your life. Now, when God says, I have laws, it is not to take away your fun. It is to give you the greatest fun possible. But it's his way and his time. That's the beauty of it all. Your decisions have already been made for you. All you got to do is align yourself with those decisions and you'll find the end result. I want to talk about that, how God relates to sex.
But to do that, I need to talk about one other thing beforehand. That's the word love. In our language, we have love. In the Greek language, there are three words for the word love. Greek language is the language the New Testament was written in. First of all, we have eros, E-R-O-S. Eros means a sexual, self-centered love. It has this attitude: I like me, you like me, we now both like the same person. It's the attitude. Second word for word love is phileo, P-H-I-L-E-O, phileo. That means a brotherly love between two good buddies, give and take. I like you, you like me. It's a back and forth, mutual, caring. The third type of love, or the third word I should say, is the word agape, A-G-A-P-E with an accent over the E. And the word agape means a total selfless giving love without demanding or requiring a response. Now, how do we usually start? Well, we usually start with eros. You know, somebody's attractive to us. We feel kind of attractive and fun, all that sort of thing. And so we start a relationship and we try to get friends, try to be friends. And there's a lot of problems involved. The more you put emotions into friendship, the harder it gets. We never do get to agape because we're all self-centered people. But you know what God does? He doesn't start with eros. He doesn't start with phileo. He starts with agape. And what God says is this: I want to teach you how to love. I want to teach you how to love in such a way you can even love your enemies. Well, if I can love my enemies, what about the people I really care about and care about me? Whoa, you got a quality of love you can never figure out for yourself. There is one verse in the Bible. I want to read it to you. I carry New Testament around with me all the time and I read it a lot. This is in the book of Romans, it's called. This is what it says. But God demonstrates his own love. The word love is agape. So God demonstrates his own agape toward us in that while we are still sinners, Christ died for us. See, the demonstration of agape is total selfless giving love. That's agape. And God put his body where his mouth was. Should I love you? He put his life on the line. Now you have to understand, I was thinking this kind of a culture, you probably have heard the words Christ died for you. I want to explain something. If somebody were to be kidnapped, ransom note was sent back to the people who were concerned. Pay so much money, you get the person back. When you pay that money, you get the person back, hopefully. But the word to bring back to you is the word to redeem. Bring that person back. You pay a price to get him back. Now, originally, you and I, each one of us, were designed by God for total oneness, intimacy with God. But because of our driving self-centeredness, we have decided to do our thing, go our way, and it's a great chasm between us and God. The result, many, many results, one of the results is this: we don't really understand God's love. We have great misconceptions about who God is, and in fact, if we stay in this condition and we die in this condition, we are separated for infinity from God. So to understand God's attitude about sex, you have to understand, first of all, God's attitude about love. Because sex is built upon love. God gave his life on the cross. He ransomed us. That is, the price for you and me to get back to God is the blood, his death on the cross. He shed it. Why? Because you and I have a penalty on our heads. We are wanted people. The law says the soul that sins, it dies. That's it. We all die, and it's a proof of our sinfulness. Jesus Christ said, I'll pay the price. But you don't have to accept it. God never coerces you. But when you say, yes, Lord, I put my faith in you, I really want what you have to say. I want what you did for me on the cross. You rose again from the dead in great power. I want that new life. In essence, what happens is, Jesus Christ takes up residence within your life. He responds to your confidence and faith. Does many, many things. Gives you eternal life. Gives you a new relationship with God. Forgives you your sins. Gives you a new perspective on life. He lives inside you day by day. But the one issue I want to talk about is, what is God's attitude about sex? That's the topic for our discussion. When you do give your life to Jesus Christ, you'll notice, as you study the scriptures, the Bible, there are many, many statements God makes about sex. From cover to cover. But there's one overriding principle that God has stated in many ways throughout the centuries and millennia. And this is it. God reserves intercourse for marriage and only marriage. Never before and never outside. That's pretty tough. And I realize if you're an average university audience, and I assume you are, well over 70% of you, according to all statistics I've ever read, don't agree with what I've just said. And you don't practice it. But I care to tell you the truth. The reason why God reserves intercourse for marriage is to protect your heart, the very thing you want to do. See, the problem with us is that when we try to protect our own heart with a big wall, we don't know how to do this, so we withdraw and we pull back. And then when we want intimacy, we simply go into the physical part and we want to get our intimacy, we want that person, and that's great. And then we withdraw back in. We wonder why relationships constantly fail. God says this, a man shall leave his family, a woman shall leave her family, they shall come together and become one flesh. The beauty of what God does is He merges two people together so that there's a whole new principle of life within there. There's a bond that does not quit. In fact, God says, whom God brings together, let no man pull apart. The marriage bed, God says, is undefiled. So the beauty of sex is that God is right there involved. See, when we think of sex, we won't want God around at all. But God has designed it so that when you come together, it is the consummation, the culmination of a committed relationship in marriage before God and people, that you are now husband and wife and you're there, period, for life. And the consummation is now you can express your sexuality with God smiling. You can imagine the joy of that kind of experience, to know God smiles. Well, I realize that many of you have had great difficulty in this area. And with understanding in my heart, I say this. No matter how difficult you have experienced things in your life, God's forgiveness goes deeper, deeper than any problem you've ever gotten yourself into. In other words, God simply says when He hung on the cross, that blood was shed because you and I have difficult problems, especially we're selfish and self-centered, and we do things our way. And God says, I want to take that heart of yours, and I want to cleanse it. I want to give you right standing with me. I want to wash you clean. And as a result, to give you a whole new purpose and direction for love. You see, and I have to understand something. The beauty of God is that He's all for you. He wants you to experience the best and the greatest. But it's in His time and His way. That's freedom. And along this line, let me say something. I was at a human sexuality convention. All day long Saturday thing, and a woman was teaching, psychologist. And she got on the subject of virginity. Somewhere along the middle of the day, she started to laugh about it. I mean, it was the biggest joke of the day. Everybody laughed. And this whole, about 50 people in this big audience here. Everybody just yucked it up, had a great time, laughed about virgins and virginity. But I'll tell you one thing, I didn't laugh. And I'll bet you $1 billion God did not laugh either. Amen. Do you know how important virginity is? It is the only thing you have in your life that you can give away one time to one person, never again. God says, choose well to whom you give that gift. Now I realize there's a lot of jokes about virgins. And I realize people look down their noses at it. I was at one university and this girl came over to me afterwards. She said, you know, I've been so upset about this whole idea. She said, I'm the only virgin on my whole floor. Everybody talks about it. And they've all been laughing at me and mocking me. And they say I have, you know, I'm not attractive to men. And nobody really wants me and I'm a reject. She says, I've been so harassed and felt so put down. I've been starting to look around for guys somehow or other to get rid of my virginity so they won't laugh at me. And for the very first time in my life tonight, I realized it's the most precious thing I have to give to somebody else. And basically, what you give is a lack of scars and pain and heartache that comes from previous experiences. I've never yet met a couple who are married that have said to me, "We are sorry we waited." I have met hundreds that have said, "We are sorry we did not wait." And let me say again, virginity is not what's going to, you know, give you joy of life. It's nice to have it, but it's only God that gives you the joy of the heart. You see, what God wants for you and me is love. Love is not going to quit when the time gets tough. Not going to quit with sickness or pain. Not going to quit with old age. But love that continues. Now, wait a minute, I'm at the end of my talk. I do want to give you a challenge to think about these issues. I realize that maybe some of you are pretty stunned about some of the things I've said tonight. I'm sure you probably never read it in books or heard your professors talk about it like this. Maybe tonight is a good time for just to think about this whole issue. But a more important issue is your relationship with God Himself. Do you have that kind of relationship with Him where He has cleansed your heart and given you a new joy and a new purpose? You may no longer be a virgin. You can never be a physical virgin again if you've lost your virginity. But I can honestly say, God can make you an emotional virgin. He can return the joy and the spirit of hope and the sensitivity and the caring. He can take those scars and move them from your heart and give you a new direction and purpose. But you have to respond to Him. You have to put your faith on the line. Say, "Hey, I want you to live in me." And if you've gone too far and have struggles, He can give you the power to change. He can transform your very being. So tonight, before you go to bed, I just suggest, like I did last night, just to get alone. Just think about some of these things. If it makes sense to you that Christ demonstrated His love for you and that He gave His life for you, He wants to cleanse you and wash you and give you new power to change. Just in the quietness of your heart, wherever you are, maybe taking a walk or lying in bed or whatever, just say, "Lord Jesus Christ, I want you. I'm so selfish and self-centered." Whether you're a virgin or not, you're still selfish and self-centered without that joy and forgiveness of God Himself. Say, "Lord, I give you my heart. I want you to be in my heart. I want you to cleanse me. I put my confidence in you. Thank you for hearing my prayer." If you do that, I simply suggest two other things, which I suggested last night. You get a Bible out somewhere, I mean, maybe a little New Testament like this, or have to ask your roommate for a Bible. Say, "Hey, you got a Bible?" And roommate says, "A what?" "A Bible." "A what?" I mean, so many people say to me, "Oh, the Bible's not for me." Do you know why they say that? They've heard somebody else say, "The Bible's not for me." Then they read it themselves. If you're intellectually honest, why don't you check out what's purported to be the greatest book that's ever written? Just you and the book. Check it out. Read John chapter 3. Just look up John on the table of contents. Read it three times before you go to bed. John 3, three times. It talks about a new birth in your heart. You'll be amazed at what you learn. Second thing I suggest is you find someone else that you know as a person who has given his heart or her heart to Christ. Someone that you may know has really investigated who Jesus Christ is. And notice I didn't say a person who calls himself a Christian. Because let's face it, a lot of people call themselves Christians and they're phonies. Their life certainly does not back up what they say. I mean, just because you're brought up in a Christian home doesn't mean you're Christian. Just because you're brought up in a garage doesn't mean you're a car. And it's your personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Talk to someone who's really given his heart to heart to Christ and say, "How do you learn more about relationships? How do you learn what Christ can do in your life? How do you find that forgiveness?" And I hope that person will tell you, you may want to get involved in some of the Christian organizations on campus to learn and to develop in your relationships. Now, before I say one last thing, I want to get your opinion, your comments. We have some cards that we passed out last night. You may have been here, but I want to pass out these blank cards again. Just grab a card and a pencil. Just give me your spontaneous comments and response to what we have to say. So this is going to take about 2 minutes and then we're finished. So I appreciate you just hold your seats and we're going to ask you to do this. On the card, just put your name and where you live, that is campus address and, you know, dorm or number, and your phone number. So just write on there your name and where you live on campus. Don't put a post office box. It's hard to live inside of a post office box. Just put your dorm or fraternity or sorority or wherever else you live. If you're off campus, put your off campus address. And then give me a comment of what you thought about what I've had to say. So the cards are still filtering on down. If you filled one out last night, I appreciate you filling out again tonight. because you probably have different comments than last night. So your name and where you live and then a comment. What did you think about the things that I've had to say? Does anybody need cards? I know we have lots of cards. Anybody need a card? Just raise your hand. Everybody have a card? Anybody need pencils? I know we have buckets of pencils left over. I think we need some pencils down up front. You got some more? Several people need cards and pencils here. Okay. Why don't you pass the cards over there? I think we need some. Anybody else need cards and pencils? Okay. So I'm going to put your name, where you live, and phone number, campus address, and then a comment. What did you think about what I had to say? And then if you would like more information, that is, you want to know more about this kind of thing, relationship with Jesus Christ, want to know more about forgiveness, may want to know more about, you know, how to develop that relationship, just put down the word information. Now let me explain. I've written this little article I talked about last night. It's called The Search for Intimacy. And if you want to purchase it, you can purchase it over there. It usually sells for a dollar, but we sell it for 50 cents at the Booktail because we get a publisher discount. But if you really want to know more about Christ, and we'd love to give this to you free. That is, if you want to put the word information down there, want to know more about Christ and how it relates to your life, then we'll give you a ring or a call, whatever else, bring this by. Somebody will give it to you and discuss some of the material in it. We'd like to be of help to you. And the other thing you'll notice over on the table are a lot of books and tapes. Being the breakup habit is all about relationships, how to build a strong relationship. Goes through the five areas, why couples break up, how to overcome those five major areas. And some of the stuff I talked about tonight is in here. And the many other chapters on commitment and all those kind of things. You sell it for $6, but we sell it when I come around for $5. So if you'd like to pick it up, feel free. It's $5. And the other two books are called The 31-Day Experiment and Faith, A 31-Day Experiment. And it gives you 31 passages, one a day. You may have tried to start reading the Bible, not know where to go. So this gives you a passage a day for 31 days. And you can just fill in whatever you learn. It helps you to find consistency day by day to learn about God. So you can pick that one up or the subject of faith. And then there are a lot of tapes over there. Usually $4, but we sell them for $3. And by the way, I made this announcement last night. If you would like a tape and you don't have $3 to your name, you come and ask me and I'll write out a card and I'll give it to people at the table, and I'll give you one of the tapes free. Now, the reason why I do that is because I don't want money to be the issue if you really do want to know more about Christ. I'm interested in helping you out. However, if you can borrow from a friend and pay the friend back, you know, I appreciate that very much. But anyway, so fill out the cards. When you finish, there'll be a buckets over here, and